Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You're Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. The Warriors played again tonight, Tuesday night, and beat the Miami Heat 107-105 in a game that didn't necessarily comport to expectations, but ended up in about the right place. Pretty close to the betting line, which is actually kind of funny a little bit at the end. But there are a lot of different ways to interpret it. The biggest part of this story, what made today's game different than so many others, is that Klay Thompson didn't play. Thompson got a scheduled rest day before the game. Coach Kerr talked about how he was ill last week, but ended up playing anyway, and that he just needed a day of rest. And as it turned out, they didn't need him to win, though he certainly would have helped. And that gave Coach Kerr and the coaching staff an opportunity to try some really different stuff. And the biggest decision they made was to play rookie Patrick McCaw as the starting two guard, as opposed to Ian Clark. And there are a couple different reasons why that makes sense, and a couple different reasons why I didn't particularly like it. On the logic side, it maintains the rest of the rotation. It allows you to see something from McCaw, who hasn't gotten to play a lot recently. And, you know, you get to kind of see how he works in a circumstance with a lot of the other team's best players. The downside of it is that I have been leading the charge, if you want to call it that, for Ian Clark as Clay Light for a while now. And it would have been nice to see how well he could do in that, really given the role and the responsibilities. It's very reasonable that he doesn't have the whole package down yet in terms of how to handle screens and cuts and everything like that, though Ian Clark is a good cutter. So in that circumstance, maybe the continuity is more important, but you don't get many opportunities to really see what a player like Clark can do in that role. And so I would have preferred Clark get that and then just use McCaw as the bench piece, especially because, you know, Clark played 22 minutes. He certainly could have played more than that, strike a little bit of a different balance, but not the biggest deal in the world, especially because they won the game. McCaw looked fine. He defended reasonably well, though he didn't have a particularly hard assignment. They bounced him around a little bit in terms of the various different players on Miami. With Josh Richardson out, Miami has more of a cavalcade of two guards. Tyler Johnson got some minutes, Deion Waiters, Wayne Ellington, bounced around a few different guys. And defensively, McCaw did pretty well, stayed with his guy, had a couple nice help possessions where even if it didn't necessarily affect the outcome of the play, he was in the right spot at the right time, which is very good for a player as young and inexperienced in the NBA as he is. He hasn't gotten a lot of reps, and it was something we noticed in summer league. Offensively, he was a non-entity, is probably the most fair way to put it. He wasn't bad, but he also wasn't a huge presence, and it's another fundamental difference between McCaw and Clark. And something I believe Tim Kawakami pointed out is that the fundamental difference between summer league McCaw and this McCaw is the idea of being comfortable and feeling like taking shots, because it's very different when you're the guy on the floor who's getting the developed minutes. The Warriors didn't have their other draft pick on the floor because Damian Jones was still hurt. And here, he's the worst player on the floor and he knows it. So you don't want to take excess shots away from Durant and Zaza and Steph and really anybody else. So I understand why he was reluctant in moments to take shots. And it's hard to ingrain a player with that idea, especially when the guys they're deferring to are all-stars. So that is worth keeping in the back of our minds. The unsurprising part of this game was that Miami played really hard. They challenge opponents every single night, and they just don't have enough talent right now. They defended reasonably well throughout, but the biggest place where they hemorrhaged the advantage was when they had to have bench players in. Goran Dragic suffered a little bit at various moments. Hassan Whiteside was actually positive in this game that his team lost by 12. But when Miami went more heavily to the bench units, they just didn't have the horses for the Warriors. And that's not surprising because Miami is missing a ton of guys due to injury. One great way of knowing that a team is dealing with some stuff on that end is when they have multiple players that are on their active list that cannot play. And in this game, Justice Winslow had surgery. He's not even with the team. Josh Richardson was a fairly late scratch with a foot injury, so he didn't even dress. So they were down to 10 guys, two of which were Udonis Haslam and Derek Williams, who didn't play. So depth was always going to be an issue. Of course, Chris Bosh is out for the foreseeable future with his health issues. So Miami was dealing with a huge talent disadvantage even without Clay. And even though some of those bench players had really nice moments, Tyler Johnson, James Johnson being the two biggest of those, including the big dunk on Steph Curry at the end of the first half, which the footage will... But people have been joking that the footage will be deleted on it. It was one heck of a play, considering it was right at the end of a quarter. You don't see many buzzer-beating dunks, especially not at the fourth quarter. Like, just a cool circumstance. It was not a charge. I think Curry said that after the game. It was not a charge. And so you had all these different pieces that were coming together. And I wasn't surprised really at all that the game was close at halftime. Miami had a 1-point lead because they played so hard and the Warriors were a little bit out of sorts. They were dealing with Clay missing time and everything like that. They reacted reasonably well to that challenge, had a nice third quarter, pushed the advantage, and Miami played better with a little bit of a bench-heavy unit in the fourth quarter to cut the lead down to 3, I believe, was as close as it ever got. But they didn't have the talent to get it all the way. Two other important notes on this game that we'll have to see their significance moving forward. The first one was a big adjustment that the Warriors made at halftime. Wasn't really present in the first half, was a little bit. Hassan Whiteside is a talented rim protector. Not the greatest help defender all the time. He has to be in the right spot, but he can do it. But he is really bad in pick and roll or pick and roll-esque plays against a shooting guard because he doesn't like to get out. It's a similar issue with DeAndre Jordan, but the way that the Clippers have dealt with that is just by doing straight switching. So then it's not about really showing or hedging or anything like that. It's just being there because that's your man now. What the Heat do a lot in those circumstances, whether by design or by necessity, because it's just what Hassan Whiteside will do anyway, is he just hangs back. And so what the Warriors started doing, particularly at the beginning of that third quarter, was using Zaza Pachulia either as a screener or doing a handoff, which functionally they're about the same thing, to try to create the matchup where Zaza's job is to create space between Curry's man, typically Goran Dragic, and Curry. And then if Whiteside doesn't show, Curry gets a wide open jump shot, sometimes a 2, sometimes a 3. And if Whiteside does, and this happened actually in the fourth quarter on one of the last highlight plays of the game, then Curry should be able to get around him. Whiteside is not the most agile guy in the world. He's more of a vertical athlete than a horizontal one. So you're creating a quality look just about every time, especially because Pachulia is a good screener. So they started using that a lot more ruthlessly in that third quarter, and it really paid off. Good looks for Curry, good looks for the team overall. And the Warriors in general need to take advantage of circumstances like that when they present themselves. And yeah, Curry only had 4 points. He was 1 of 7 from the field, but they were good looks, and he ended up with 4 assists. So that is productive enough. It also helps that Miami only had 14 points in the entire third quarter, but the Warriors did a nice job creating something out of what the defense was choosing to give them. And that's exactly what any good team does, not only against the best opponents, and we'll have to wait until Monday, Martin Luther King Day, to see that again, but they also do it against inferior opponents because then they can use that advantage to get an easier win than they would have had otherwise. And the Warriors deserve, a coaching staff, everyone deserves a lot of credit for getting there eventually. One of the other fascinating parts of this game that I legitimately did not see coming was the way that Coach Kerr decided to use the bench and the rotations. And so in the first half, the Warriors played Steph Curry and Kevin Durant functionally the entire first quarter. And so I was sitting there about 3 minutes to go in the first going, well, this is weird. And Coach Kerr explained it after the game, and instead of leading into it, I'll just let him explain it. Anthony Slater asked the question, and Kerr gave an interesting answer.
You've so carefully and logically made sure to keep Steph or Durant on the floor at some point, at least one of them. Why did you play in the whole first quarter and set up so they would have a period where both of them will be off the court? What was the thinking there?
The thinking is just looking at Draymond with that second group rather than KD, just to see what that looks like. Kind of what I've talked about you know, all season about experimenting, and we're still doing that. And so, you know, different combinations are good to look at and to see what they bring. And that's a, you know, that lineup may not have as much firepower, but it's got a lot of length and defense. So we just wanted to look at it.
That's what the regular season is for, trying things out, seeing what works. I would have been more interested in what it would have been if you ran a similar lineup, but Klay Thompson was on the floor, just because you get so much more shooting and offensive viability. That group did well enough in those second quarter minutes, but they would have had a much fairer shot at it with somebody like Klay instead of Ian. But you know, David West was still +8 in that stretch. Sean Livingston was +4 in a longer one, but I think West is more reflective of that period of time. So it worked reasonably well. However, it's also context in something like this, when you're dealing with small sample sizes, is incredibly important. Miami did not have their best unit out there, so they looked good, but they looked good against opponents that can make that possible. So we will have to see if Kerr goes back to that. But the general process is very exciting and encouraging to me, because whether it's in a game where you have one of your best players out, or just because you can due to circumstance or anything else, trying something new, seeing how something works, is a part of what the regular season is about, especially for a team that doesn't define their success by it, that doesn't need to grind out every minute of every game because they have bigger goals in mind and they don't have to worry about making the playoffs. They may not even have to worry about grinding for the number one overall seed. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But that process, regardless of whether it was supposed to be this game or anything like that, the process is more important. The process is sound. And the Warriors should be doing that more often. I would like to see David West playing with the starters with some frequency. JaVale has a nice chemistry, particularly with Draymond and Steph, but I would like to see West in that capacity. Lots of other little wrinkles and idiosyncrasies that they still have more than half the season to try out. But I really liked hearing Kerr talk about that and explain what his process was. And there was a second piece that I think might be the other big takeaway from this game, was question about the fourth quarter execution and how they looked. And Kerr gave an insightful answer, more by what he said he was looking for than anything else.
I know it wasn't a prime opponent, but did you like the way you guys responded, considering what's happened lately, late in the game, to kind of pull away in the fourth?
Yeah, I mean, there was good and bad. I thought we had two great possessions in a row with really good force and execution, and we scored on both of them, and that kind of put the game away. But there were a couple earlier where it was, you know, we're kind of walking the ball up the floor and with no purpose. So we still have to get better. We should be pushing the ball at every opportunity and getting into some kind of action, you know, right away. And there were still a couple of possessions where a lot of standing around. So we'll keep working at it and we'll keep getting better.
The idea of pressing when the opportunity presents itself, which is basically always, and getting into plays early is great, because there are lots of different ways that teams can fail in these circumstances. If you want to go back in your brain to Game 6 of the Oklahoma City series when the Thunder flailed, there were a couple different ways that they did so. And coaching can always be a part of that. Some coaches like to see teams, especially if they have a lead, take a little bit of time, get into their stuff slowly, and work for the best shot. And with a young team, sometimes that can work. However, pushing can create opportunities, because sometimes players don't get back, they don't get the assignments, especially if there's a cross match, so a defensive assignment that's a little bit different, that sort of a thing. You can really take advantage of those opportunities, and getting into sets early can bait some teams into shooting too quickly. The Warriors actually did this at the end of the second half, or end of the second quarter, sorry, which is what led to James Johnson dunking on Steph Curry. But broadly speaking, it can create more opportunities as well. And if you can combine pushing the ball when you can, getting into your sets early, and still understanding the value of shots, you can do a really nice thing offensively, which is that you put the defense under a lot of stress, especially if the defensive team, so the team that isn't the Warriors, is behind, because then you're sitting there going, oh, we have to make something happen. Sometimes you can force a mistake. And if you are patient enough to not be satisfied with a worse look than you can get later on, you don't suffer any of the ill consequences. So not every team can pull it off. I'm not completely sure that the Warriors can pull it off, but if that's what the coaching staff is going for, and that is what they will be working on, presumably as a part of the practice time, shoot around time over the next few months, it's a lot more likely to happen that way than if they had done something else with their time. So I'm very encouraged by that. And again, like I said before with the Draymond in the bench unit stuff, the process is far more important than the results, especially at this point in the year. And that's really all we have to work from. So I want to see that manifest itself, particularly over the next month, now that they've gotten that kickstart into figuring this stuff out due to losing to Cleveland, losing to Memphis, and now playing Cleveland again. It will take a long time to get all the way there, but getting into sets early is something that you can identify on single possessions, single games, and frequency is more important than just kind of anything else in that way, because they can make something happen and they can try it, and each opportunity that they do or do not do it is a choice in and of itself, and whether there are consequences of making that choice. So we will have to see how that happens against better competition, and also if being ahead or being behind affects the process here. The Warriors aren't behind that much late, but those opportunities are a good test and will be another way of seeing how their late game execution works. I'm guessing they'll be more aggressive in those times, but they've struggled to hold on to leads. So both elements of this story are exceedingly important when we get into the postseason and they're facing the best of the best. And the best of the best ties in with another important development of the evening, which is that both the Spurs and the Cavs lost. Not terrible losses either way. LaMarcus Aldridge didn't play for the Spurs. They lost at home to the Bucks, but Spurs have lost at home a couple times this year. I believe this is their fourth loss at home. While Cleveland, I think this was their first loss in a while where LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love all played, but they lost in Utah to the Jazz, who've looked really, really good since they got all of their guys back. And I'm not counting Alec Burks because Alec Burks is pretty much never healthy. That means the Warriors have a more meaningful edge, especially considering they pulled out the win on Miami. 538's current projections have them finishing 4 games ahead of the Spurs and 9 games ahead of the Cavs, with the Rockets in between at 61. So if you want to visualize it, Warriors at 67 wins, Spurs at 63, Rockets at 61, Cavs at 58, Raptors shortly behind them. That is enough space to really provide a tactical advantage if it holds. Because right now the Warriors and Spurs are only 2 games apart in the loss column. The Rockets and Cavs are only 3 games behind in the loss column. But if the Warriors keep on their path, especially if they can beat Cleveland on Monday, they might have enough of a buffer to not push it super hard at the end, which also makes it easier in terms of the idea of, even if they got close to 73, I really don't expect it, especially after losing to Memphis the way that they did. But having home court and not having to grind in that last couple weeks for it would be huge for the Warriors. And there is a reason to expect that they will have an advantage moving forward. So if we can use the past, what we've seen as a grounds for looking at what we have moving forward. But San Antonio is older than the Warriors are, so they'll rest guys more zealously than the Warriors do. Of course, this coming on a night when Klay Thompson got his first strategic rest of the year. The Rockets are dealing with an injury to Clint Capella. They're very top-heavy. James Harden, not only due to missing games with injury, but foul trouble, scheduled rest, will probably pull them down a little bit, and they've played absolutely phenomenally for the last month. Cleveland, same thing. They know that they don't need it, especially I don't think they feel like they need the number one seed in their own conference at all. So that might give the Warriors even more clearance than it looks like they're going to have right now. It's far too early to read too much into that, but at the same point, a very encouraging development for those who attribute part of what happened last season to fatigue, both physical and mental. I am one of those people. I think that it didn't help at the bare minimum, and it very well might have hurt them a little bit. It was not the back sweat that caused Steph Curry's MCL sprain, but it was a contributing factor in the whole thing that made it harder for them at the end, because they'd gone through so much. And it also helped now, going through that pain, going through that disappointment, helped them refocus on this year, and seeing Kerr take a rest day for Klay probably should have been the Memphis game, in all honesty, considering he wasn't feeling well and didn't look right on the floor for the vast majority of that game. But better late than never absolutely applies in this case, and also good that they were willing to do it in a home game. Helps that their next two games are at home, so there wasn't really a choice in the matter that way. But a lot of teams are reluctant to sit their best players at home because of the disappointment for the crowd. Helps when you have three other All-Stars. But that sort of judgment helps, because teams that choose it based on home or road more than the matchup, more than the situation, more than the player himself, can get into trouble. I think of when Washington had a situation, I think it was earlier this year, where John Wall looks like he was still coming back from all of his stuff. Looked like he was going to need to take a day, and they had back-to-back games. One was at home against the Cavs, the other was on the road against someone worse than the Cavs, which is basically everybody else. And they chose to play him in the home game against Cleveland, marquee game. Not surprisingly, they lost. And then they lost the other game because John Wall didn't play and he's incredibly important. In that circumstance, while the coaching staff could have looked at something else, or an easy rationale for why they did it is because, you know, ticket sales, everything else like that. And their team lost an extra game because of it. In this circumstance, it's pretty plainly obvious that Kerr and the staff and Klay was presumably involved as well, made the right decision for the right reasons. And that is a far more sustainable path than anything else. So we can't say definitively that they're going to make these right decisions moving forward. We don't know. And this is a very different season than last year, but I do expect it to come into play more frequently. And the idea of sitting one guy at a time makes a lot of sense when you have a team as good as the Warriors are. For other teams, if you're middle of the pack or lower, I'm more fully on board with the idea of just punting a game or two and just saying, let's give all of our best guys rest. The Warriors did something similar to this against Denver 2 years ago, the year they won the title. But they're good enough that they can sit Klay for a game against Miami or a team of that ilk. They can sit Steph for a game against the right opponent and still be favorites to win and still probably win the game. So then they can have their cake and eat it too. They get to test out some different lineups. They get to give their best players rest, mitigate their chances of injury. And that will come into play more later in the year, because February in particular has this strange pattern. This is true every year in the NBA, where because the players get a week off, they get more intense in terms of the league scheduling gets more intense in terms of back-to-backs and four and fives around All-Star break, because they're like, oh, well, they're getting time off anyway, and still putting plenty of strain on the guys. And a lot of the Warriors are not going to get much time off for All-Star weekend. So this will probably be dormant for about a month. That's my instinct, but it will come back into play again. So I want to see if this mentality of identifying a circumstance, sitting the guy and not really hesitating on it applies moving forward, because if it does, that's a very good thing for the fans. It's a very good thing for the players, most importantly, and for their health moving forward. So we will see how all of that goes. I will have a new podcast out tomorrow, so that'll be on Thursday morning. I do not know exactly what it will be about yet. I'm toying with the idea of doing a mailbag. It'll depend on my own timing. I also have enough stuff, questions from emails, that I could just do an email bag and save a Reddit one or something else like that for later. So I will figure that out during the time, and then, as you would expect, have a podcast that will be on the Pistons game, which the game occurs Thursday night. That'll be Friday. That will be the last podcast of the week for Locked On Warriors. And then this one's already recorded. I will have a preview of the Cavs game, already recorded it with Chris Manning, who does Locked On Cavs, talking about what we're looking for in the game. The tentative plan is to put that out at some point on Sunday, because the game is earlier in the day on Monday. The game's at 5. If you have a strong opinion on when that podcast should come out, because all I have to do with it is just clean up a little editing, add an intro, add an outro, nothing too big. If you have a strong preference on when it comes out, like within the day on Sunday, let me know. I'm open to suggestion on that. I don't really want to put it out on Saturday, because then it can get lost in the shuffle. There's a lot of other issues in terms of podcast release on Saturday. There are reasons why whatever podcast you like, there are very rarely episodes there. And since it isn't a game situation where the material is so timely, I probably won't do that. So we'll see how all that goes. But it will definitely come out, because it's already basically done. So tentatively, Sunday afternoon, maybe a little bit earlier if people have a clamoring for it and, you know, would say, hey, I'd listen to it during the day on Sunday. I will listen to you in that sense. But some people really do like having something for their commute. So I will listen to input on that. The best way to send that input is DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. Or you can send something at Danny LaRue on Twitter. Email's better because I can't lose it in the shuffle of everything else that goes on in my mentions. And because, you know, it's a little bit more permanent. And also it gives you a chance to share a little bit more. And that's feedback on anything, this, whatever on the show. If you want to support the show, really do appreciate it. You can leave a rating, leave a review on whatever podcast player you use. You can also subscribe, download every episode. Really basic stuff, but it does really help. And word of mouth, whether that be actual word of mouth or through social media or whatever, those sorts of things really help. It is a crowded landscape, and the other people in this landscape do great work. I will not say anything critical of them because I enjoy their work. I'm a consumer of it and an appreciator of it. But if you like what I do and you want to share it with other people, I really appreciate you doing so. And you can also check out the other Locked On podcasts beyond all the other great NBA teams. Locked On NBA, which Dave Vellock does and is great. Locked On Fantasy Basketball. And then all the material related to the NFL now that both Bay Area teams are done, but there's still plenty going on. I mean, the Niners are looking for a coach and a GM. The Raiders are dealing with a whole bunch of other drama, it sounds like, from what I was able to tell on Twitter today. Hopefully that all works out in favor of Oakland. I'm a Bay Area guy, born and raised, so I hope that works out. And that's enough for now. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.